Okay, it is now past 7 o'clock, and it looks like we've got a full committee tonight, so I'm going to call this meeting of the Environment and Land Use Committee to order. The clerk would call the roll.
Ms. Anderson?
Here.
Mr. Dennett?
Here.
Ms. Ammons, I'm sorry.
Here.
Mr. Jones?
Here.
Mr. Langenheim?
Here.
Mr. Kurtz?
Here.
Mr. Mosier?
Here.
Mr. Schrader?
Here.
And Ms. Wysocki?
Here. I need a motion to approve the agenda for this evening.
So moved.
Motion by Mr. Kurtz.
Second.
Seconded by Ms. Anderson. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Need a motion to approve two sets of open session minutes, those of February 9th, 2009, and those of March 19th, 2009.
So,
well, let's get some motions first. Ms. Ammons, is there a second? By Ms. Anderson. Use your microphone, please.
Page 5, line 13 to 14.
Is this February or March?
February.
Go ahead.
I believe. Anyway, that line significantly alters my intent in making that statement, and I realize that you can't reproduce the word-for-word recording, and you have to edit it down so that it doesn't take too much space and it isn't horribly ungrammatic. But it states there, Mr. Langenheim noted that the portion of the moraine that goes from Leroy to Bloomington is a superior wind resource. In no way, shape, or form would I say that that was a superior wind resource, and I have prepared a substitute. Mr. Langenheim noted that according to a U.S. Geological Survey evaluation of wind energy resources, the best areas in Illinois are mapped as marginal. Also, the morainal ridge between Leroy and Bloomington is mapped as falling within the best of Illinois area. I'd like to have that done. And then on page 19, line 41, I would like to substitute but for and, and will be found that the rates are comparable but significantly lower, not and significantly lower.
Okay. Can you give the secretary the wording on that first change, just to make sure we have it correctly? Anything else?
No.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Schrader.
It'll be February 9th, under others' presence. Others present. Who else got me? It's not Tom Barnes. I believe it's Tom Burns. Make that correction, please.
Okay, duly noted. Anything else in the minutes? Can we approve these minutes as amended? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. We also have closed session minutes from October 14th of 2008. Those are found in your folder.
Approval.
Motion's been made to approve those minutes.
Second.
Seconded by Mr. Kurtz. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. In your package, you will find a number of correspondence. One is for the Amerins Illinois Utilities Open House. There is another regarding notice of hazardous waste permitting. There is a third regarding legislation affecting enterprise zones and TIF districts. And the last is a notice about the upcoming recycling, electronics and computer recycling event.
Correspondence be accepted and placed on file.
Motion by Mr. Langenheim, seconded by Ms. Ammons. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. There's nothing from the chair for this evening. So we will move right into public participation. Okay, let's start with Mr. Yes. Thank you. I'm just going to restate the guidelines for public participation. We will devote no more than an hour to public participation if need be. Since we don't have that many people wishing to speak, 5 minutes may be a little restrictive. So if you can keep it to that, fine. If it goes a little bit beyond that, I won't cut you off unless you're going to go for 20 minutes. And if your comments are pretty much in line with someone who has spoken previously, let's not repeat testimony. Let's get some new information or some new perspectives. And I will take the list of participants in a random order. Let's start with Mr. Gertis. Please state your name and address, please.
I'm Jed Gertis. I reside at 1448 County Road, 2700 East Ogden, Illinois. We do have land involved in the wind project area down in southern Champaign County, Vermilion County, Douglas, and areas. And I just wanted to make a short statement tonight about the setbacks. I'm encouraging the board to keep them at least 1,500 feet from the non-participating dwellings. If not, just keep it 1,500 feet from the whole property line. And the basis for that is the noise level and also these people that are non-participating, they have no way to negotiate with the wind companies like the participants do. The participants can adjust, you know, where a windmill sits, but a non-participating person can't. And these windmills take up up a larger area than what the actual physical windmill does. Talking to Horizon, they said an average, you know, without any obstructions, the large windmills, the closest they could really set them together was 1,700 feet in between windmills and a mile from one row to the next. That's what I was informed by them. And when you think of it in that context, that means 2,500 feet one direction and almost 900 feet the other direction is what each windmill requires. And without the proper setbacks from the non-participating dwellings, these wind companies will be able to leapfrog over property and be able to use their wind power that they're not paying for and not be required to give them anything for using that. In fact, you know, they really don't like signing up 40-acre patches or even smaller patches, and there's people out there that own smaller patches. So say if you own something less than 40 acres, they would use your wind power and not even offer you a contract for that. So the setbacks need to be kept from the property line and kept a substantial distance, that 1,500 feet, because you wouldn't allow, say, Lowe's to use, you know, the neighbor business's parking lot, or you wouldn't allow Walmart to ship its water on down the river without making a reservoir to catch their own water and release it at a right rate. So in that respect, we ought to treat these wind companies with the same set of standards, and if they need the area, they have the free will to purchase it. They can go to the landowner, sweeten the pot or whatever to encourage them to come along with the program. And according to any letters I've received, almost everybody's on board anyway, so it shouldn't be a real big deal for a very few out there that may not want to participate. But just decreasing the setbacks would really just cause for a lot of complaints and hardship down the road for everybody. So we encourage you to keep the setbacks at 1,500 feet and make it all from the property line, because a person that owns 40 acres or 80 acres out there should be able to build on that property anywhere they want to, not be restricted by windmills that have been put too close to their property line, and therefore, you know, they have to move their house 500 feet or 1,000 feet one direction to get away from the noise and get away from all the other aspects of being close to a wind turbine. It is their land. They own it. They were there first. And these companies don't have the right of eminent domain. They're a private enterprise just like any other enterprise is, and they shouldn't overrule the existing landlord's rights. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Sherry Schilt.
My name is Sherry Schilt, and I live at 398 County Road 2500 North. And I have three requests of you. One is to put the map amendment back into the zoning ordinance. It just seems to me that it doesn't make any sense if you need to rezone in the ag zoning area to site a gas station, to site a beauty shop, to site a barber shop. The impact of those three things is almost nothing compared to a wind farm. I was driving down Springfield Avenue a couple days ago, and I had not done that for a while, and I was amazed at how large that building is, the one that's replaced Burnham City Hospital. So I called them and asked them. It was looming, even in the urban landscape. It just looms. And I called and asked them how tall it was, and they said it was 18 stories high. So I'm being very generous in giving each story 12 feet, and 18 times 12 is 216 feet tall, so my guess is that building is around that. But these windmills, the ones up in McLean County, are 398 feet tall. That's almost twice as tall. The ones that are coming in, we're going to allow them to be 500 feet tall or 498 feet tall. And there won't be just one. There'll be many. And they will be turning and turning and turning and impossible to ignore. So I think that because the impact is so great, not only on adjacent landowners, but on for miles around, that it's only right that people have the right to weigh in, to be able to make a higher standard and than just a special use permit. The other thing is, in the Manlove gas storage field, we live there, and it's already an area of risk. And we just feel that putting a wind turbine or 30 wind turbines or more in the Manlove gas storage field and reducing the setbacks from the pipelines from what is in the ordinance now, as is proposed in the memorandum, is just asking for trouble. We have risk added to risk. And I just don't, I think that they should not be allowed in the Manlove gas storage field. And then finally, the setbacks, I agree with Mr. Gertis. I was dismayed to see that someone wanted to reduce the 1,500 feet. It just isn't right. There is no scientific evidence for instance, the model ordinance saying that 1,000 feet is just fine. There's no evidence saying that that's okay. And in Woodford, I found this story just today. In Woodford County, they're actually going to have a hearing on Thursday night. The Woodford County Conservation Planning and Zoning Committee, which I'm assuming is similar to ELUC, has filed a petition to increase their setbacks from 750 feet to 1,800 feet. And I don't know what the outcome of that will be, but they apparently think that there's something wrong with a lower setback. And I will give a copy of this to John, but this is also another article from an organization, and they have done a list of all the different countries in Europe who have a lot more experience with wind farms than we do. And especially I wanted to highlight Denmark and Germany. In Denmark, windmills must be situated at a minimum distance of 4 times their height away from any habitation. And if a windmill is 400 feet tall, that would be a minimum of 1,600 feet. And beyond that, they also require compensation for lost property values from the owners of the windmills. And that's if it's closer than 6 times its height. So apparently they have some problems there. Germany, which has, I believe, more windmills than any other country. I may be wrong, but I know they have a lot. They apply their setbacks according to noise level protection of the area. For quiet regions, which I think would be a rural setting, they require 3,281 feet to 4,921 feet. From a dwelling. And they have more experience than we do. So there's a list of all the different countries in Europe. So I will submit this. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. Pultz?
Good evening. My name is Tim Poles. I'm with Midwest Wind Energy. We're one of the several companies who are looking at potentially siting a wind energy project here in Champaign County. And I appreciate the opportunity to address the board tonight. I'll keep my comments fairly brief. I really just wanted to comment about a few provisions in the ordinance, mainly relating to setbacks. The first having to do with the setbacks to pipelines, underground pipelines. My company has several projects throughout the Midwest. We have two in operation here in Illinois and another one under construction with at least 3 others in the later stages of development. We have several other projects in Nebraska, Wisconsin, eastern Iowa, that we're developing as well. And I would say probably in at least half of those projects, we have pipelines running through the middle of the project. All of the counties and their various ordinances that we've dealt with either have basically no setback to underground pipelines, or they have a setback of 1.1 times the height of the turbine to the underground pipeline. The latter is generally the standard that we try to follow. And so I would suggest that this committee think about amending the ordinance, as I believe the zoning administrator and the staff have suggested, so that turbines can be placed 1.1 times the total turbine height to an underground pipeline. And just as kind of an aside, I know that much has been made of the Manilov gas storage area in Newcomb Township, and we're by no means making light of that facility or its importance and significance in the county. However, the pipelines running in and out of that facility are no different than other pipelines that we've worked around in the past. In fact, I believe at one of the other Zoning Board of Appeals meetings, I was asked, and I regret to say I was not aware at that time, of what the pounds per square inch, or PSI, of the natural gas running through the pipelines that we worked around is at. And I did have a conversation with an engineer from Alliance Pipeline who owns a 36-inch natural gas, high-pressure gas main running through the middle of our Big Sky project, which is now under construction near Ohio, Illinois. And I was told that the pressure running through that line is 1,740 PSI. I then had a conversation with John Hall, who informed me that the PSI of the gas lines running into and out of the Manilov gas storage area is 1,700 PSI. So while I do understand that there is a particular sensitivity to the gas storage area, it is important to note that we and in other, really other developers around the country, throughout the country, have worked around similar pipelines. And the setbacks in those instances, as far as I'm aware, have never been greater than 1.1 times the height of the turbine. In addition to the setbacks from pipelines being lessened, I would also suggest that I saw some of the language regarding the amendment to that section of the ordinance, and it separated out the above-ground gas wellheads for the gas storage area. I would also suggest that a minimum, an opportunity, the same opportunity that's provided for the underground gas pipelines in obtaining a private waiver be provided for the other aspects of the gas storage facility as well, provided that they don't violate any other sections of your ordinance, such as the pipeline impact radius. Now, on the subject of setbacks to non-participating dwellings, I certainly understand the desire to make sure that folks who decide not to participate in the project are impacted as little as possible. It's important to note that we've seen setbacks from anywhere from 750 feet, which we frankly think is too little, to about 1,300 feet, three times the total turbine height. So we believe that 1,200 feet is, in fact, a setback that will work for non-participating dwellings. And really what's going to come into play here is that if you have a setback of 1,200 feet and you also have to meet the Illinois Pollution Control Board sound standards, you know, forget about the setbacks for a second. Even if you had a 1,000-foot setback, we still have to meet the Illinois Pollution Control Board sound standards. So that's really going to dictate how far away from a non-participating dwelling we can be. So I would encourage the board to suggest amending the ordinance so that those setbacks to non-participating dwellings are 1,200 feet. And the one problem that I think I have with the proposed amendment is that it comes up with a completely separate sound standard that kind of qualifies the 1,200 feet. It comes up with 40 decibels. I would suggest that the board suggests that the Illinois Pollution Control Board standards be made to be applicable throughout the ordinance instead of having this separate 40 decibel limit in these instances. And I say that because I believe that the Illinois Pollution Control Board standards, and I think you can ask most sound experts in the Midwest, are amongst the strictest around. There's both nighttime and daytime standards. Obviously, the nighttime standards are going to be stricter. And since we can't control what sound a turbine emits during the night or the day, we always have to comply with the nighttime standards. The turbines have to be sited accordingly. They also monitor sound levels at eight different octave bands. So you're not just talking about a decibel level, which is a grouping of all the different octave bands. You're talking about different standards at different levels. So I would suggest that those Illinois Pollution Control Board standards be allowed to dictate throughout the ordinance rather than having this separate 40 decibel limit. I guess that's all I have to comment on specifically on the ordinance. You know, just in leaving the board tonight, I did just want to say that I am a graduate of the University of Illinois. I got my undergrad here. I'm excited at the prospect of doing a wind energy project in Champaign County. And I applaud the efforts of John Hall and his staff and the Zoning Board of Appeals and this board as well in taking on the task of adopting a wind energy ordinance that is basically fair to everybody. And, you know, wind energy projects do bring with them a lot of good, as well as you know, some of the maybe things that are thought of as being you know, less than desirable impacts. They bring along economic opportunity. They bring along job growth within the county. Personally, you know, our equity partner, Edison Mission Energy, has a very strong relationship with the unions here in Illinois, and will continue to work with the unions to make sure that that relationship, you know, make sure that we bring a quality, diverse group of individuals and contractors to work on the construction of these facilities if we're given the opportunity to construct a project in Champaign County. That's all I really have to say. If there's any questions, I'll certainly remain at the podium for anybody to ask them.
Thank you. Mr. Jenkins?
Good evening. Stan Jenkins. I'm the Supervisor of Assessments here in Champaign County. I was asked to come this evening just to present some data regarding assessment information and what the wind farms would be generating as far as tax dollars. Since assessment stuff is so interesting, it can typically make your eyes glaze over pretty quickly. I'll try to boil this down to something that's understandable and easy to get your hands around.
Thank you.
Excuse me. The long and the short of it is each unit is probably going to generate about $1,400 worth of taxes for the county. This is based upon a cost new of about $600,000. My research that I did some checking prior to this, I talked to the Supervisor of Assessments over in McLean County where they've got a big wind farm over there. And the assessments are actually set by the state based upon the capacity of the turbines. What they've got over there, I think, is a 1.63 megawatt, 6.5 megawatt units, and that's basically what's throughout the county. Those assessed values, depending on the footprint of the road, basically is what's going to vary, because that little bit of land difference is going to affect the overall assessment. Roughly, it's about anywhere from $95,000 to $100,000 of assessed value, which is going to translate into the county coffers of about $1,400 a unit. If we're talking about roughly 175 or so potential windmills in the or wind energy devices in the county, roughly $250,000 per year. Now, there are some caveats here. One of which is if, so I'm told, if this is in an enterprise zone, the school districts are going to get their tax dollars out of it, but the county may not get theirs, and the other taxing bodies may not get their dollars out of it if it is in an enterprise zone. Whether that enterprise zone is in place at the time of the construction begins or if it can be put in place retroactively or after it starts. Another major consideration, or what may be a major consideration, is the current legislation actually expires in 2011. What happens after 2011 with the General Assembly, all bets are off. We don't know. But as it is right now, this is what I'm referring to, although you should be aware that as of 2011, this may in fact change somewhat. I did speak with the superintendent of schools because somewhat had passed. I was passed on some notes from the previous meeting of the Zoning Board of Appeals, and someone had made the statement, at least according to the minutes, and I'll forego the names and so on, but that they had researched the tax assessment law because of testimony that she was hearing regarding tax revenue to schools does not happen. I'll come back to that. She said the tax code, as written, is as a tax offset to property taxes, and the only way that the schools get an increase in money is if the local assessor raises the property taxes in the area. Well, local assessors don't raise property taxes. They can raise assessments, but they don't raise property taxes per se. But after reading this, I contacted the superintendent of the Ridgeview School District over in McLean County. I spoke to the superintendent, and he told me that they have 161 units in that school district. That those 161 units generated an increased revenue flow for that school district of $1.23 million. Now, because of the way the school funding formula works, they lost about $300,000 from the state. But they had a net gain of roughly $900,000, and in his words, he said, "I'll take that all day long." So it doesn't appear to me that the schools are going to suffer from this, and it certainly doesn't appear to me that they're not going to see any increased revenue out of this. The only other caveat on this would be that the devices can, in fact, be depreciated. And my understanding is they, depending on the formula used for depreciation, they can be depreciated at a rate of maybe 4% per year, but it can only get down to 30% of the original cost basis. So there is a floor at which it's not going to go any lower than that. But those are the three things I noticed that might be worth further exploring, is that the enterprise zone issue, the depreciation, and the fact that the current law expires or runs out in 2011.
Can we suspend the rules to ask the question?
You need to make that as a motion.
I'd like to make a motion to suspend the rules.
Second.
Motion has been made and seconded to suspend rules for discussion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Mr. Jenkins, thank you for coming. I really appreciate
it.
We had a very nice conversation in your office the other day. There is more monies, taxing bodies, that we were talking about in total. Could you give us a number of the total amount of dollars per turbine? The $1,400 is just for the county's coffers, but there's much more dollars involved here, and I'd like to hear what those are, please.
In anticipation of such. as superintendent of schools over in Ridge, you said the way he viewed this was each unit is like a $600,000 home being built. Roughly $98,000 to $100,000 worth of assessed value. And if we go at $98,000 worth of assessed value divided by 100, and if the tax rate, depending on what the cumulative tax rate is out in that area, give me a number, what, $7 a hundred maybe? Does that sound reasonable?
You're the assessor.
I don't have all those tax rates down to memory. but thanks for pointing that out. about $7,000 per unit, give or take, depending on what that actual tax rate's going to shake out at. And if we're talking about roughly 175 units countywide, we're talking, $1.2 million.
Dan, you gave me some numbers on Prairie View and Ogden School District and on Heritage. Are those still what you gave me?
I have no clue, because I don't remember what the numbers were I gave you.
Only 13,000 power on Prairie View. That
13,000. If that's the total, if we're working on the total rate of 100, that might be for the total. That could be 12 to 13,000.
9,500 on Heritage.
If I was looking at that cumulative tax rate for those two areas, yeah, that sounds about right.
Mr. Langenheim.
I know the answer to this question, but I just want to bring it out. We all know the wind blows free across the plain up here just like it does in Oklahoma. But as I understand you, only the school district that's sitting on a moraine is going to get anything out of this.
No, I'm not saying that at all.
Where the windmills are?
Well, I mean, depending on if it's in an enterprise zone or not, I mean, I think all of the taxing bodies will benefit from it. Not just the school districts.
I'm talking about a school district that's in the flatlands and doesn't get any windmills at all.
Well, I suppose that's true. No more so or less so than if, a factory goes in down the street in one school district versus another one. That's true. If they're not going to have a windmill, they're not going to see that increased revenue. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. John Doster.
My name is John Doster. I represent Invenergy. We are developing a project that goes from Vermilion County on over here into Champaign County. And I'm not going to take a whole lot of your time because Mr. Poles very eloquently addressed most of the concerns that I had had talking about the pipeline, the distance from pipeline. Kind of just to reiterate that point is we have a project up in LaSalle County right now where we have our Grand Ridge project. We have phase one is completed and operational. We are under construction in phase two, and they're putting a pipeline in right through our project in phase two. So we do coexist with pipelines in and amongst projects quite frequently. It's not an uncommon thing. The thing I wanted to point out or touch on was to reiterate, I think it makes sense to have the 1,200-foot setback from the non-participating property owners based, again, upon the standpoint of if we're going to be held to the Illinois Pollution Control Board, I believe those standards will end up dictating and ruling the day versus an arbitrary setback number from that standpoint. And would like to talk about being from the dwelling and not necessarily property lines would be a further point of interest I'd like to talk about. As far as the tax revenues, I can't necessarily speak specifically in specific numbers, but I do know that the number is probably closer to that that $9,000 to $12,000 per turbine in a cumulative range on a per turbine basis versus just a $1,400, and that would be something that would probably be just to the schools and things like that. But Tim was very thorough in what he said, and I don't want to take everybody's time in going over those points because he pretty much checkmarked them as I was going along the line.
Thank you. Is there anyone else in the public who would like to speak at this time? Seeing none, I will declare public participation as closed. We have a couple of updates. Ms. Monty.
With regard to the land resource management plan, our next meeting is this Thursday. It's probably the last meeting before planting season. We have made our way through many of the policies. We're on the last three groups, transportation, natural resources, energy. And I think there's one more. Well, we're on to the, we're still in the policy review portion of the project. After the planting season, we will resume and hopefully complete that review in as little time as possible. And at that point, then we will move on to the next stage of working on the future land use map. That's an overview of where we are with that project. Are there any questions? Thank you. I'll move on to the next update. The Champaign County Hazard Mitigation Plan. We have begun the final stage of that plan development, the implementation and maintenance provisions for that plan. We are identifying a method and a way to schedule, to monitor, evaluate, and update that plan. And we are in the process of preparing a final draft for review. As soon as this May, coming up next month, on May 11th, I believe is the next Environment and Land Use Committee meeting, we hope to have either coincident or before or after the Environment and Land Use Committee meeting, a public meeting where we review the content of that plan in your presence. That is the information I have as an update on that plan. Thank you.
Thank you. And Mr. Hall, House Bill 0466.
Bill 0466 is the county's bill dealing with the Chatham decision, and that bill passed out of the House on March 31st. It's in the Senate now. It's been referred to the Assignments Committee, and we've gotten an email from Senator Frerichs, and Senator Frerichs says understands that the county really hopes that this bill passes. He believes that it will pass. There's a similar bill, the bill that Representative Poe was introduced in the House. It also was passed in the House and went to the Senate. Senator Frerichs thinks that it's less likely that bill will pass, but he really thinks that we have a very good chance this year with the Champaign County bill. So that is great news.
Thank you. I inadvertently forgot that we did have a written statement from the Soil and Water Conservation people, and I believe there are copies for each committee member. Is that correct, Bruce? Okay. So we'll pass those out, and you can add those or his comments to the comments that you heard earlier. Okay, we are now ready to take up case 634-AT-08. Mr. Kurtz.
Can I make a motion at this time?
We need a motion to get this on the table.
I'd like to make a motion to get this on the table.
Motion's been made. Is there a second? Seconded by Mr. Dennett. Discussion. Mr. Kurtz.
I feel certainly this is probably one of the most important pieces of legislation that this county board will be working on this last 10 years, in my estimation. What we have in front of us is a completely new technology that's being used throughout the state as a clean, safe, alternative renewable energy that brings financial stability to almost every county. In fact, every county that I've researched who have developed wind farm ordinances and wind farm development. I think what we have in front of us is an opportunity that doesn't come along very often, an opportunity to get revenues without raising taxes. That, my friends, is something unique that we have run into here. The amount of dollars concerning this opportunity is immense and could very well put us on financial stability over the next 20 to 30 years. So I'd like to make, at this time, if I can, Madam Chair, some motions to make some changes, amendments to this ordinance.
Well, let's do these one at a time.
What's that?
Let's do these motions one at a time.
Okay. My first motion will be on page 74. B2. I'd like to make a motion to decrease the 1,500-foot separation from the exterior above-ground base of a wind farm turbine tower to 1,200 feet.
Is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by Mr. Mosier. Discussion. Ms. Ammons.
I read the other material, and I saw, I believe, most of them were 1,200 feet. In the case for Champaign County, what is the difference in the 300 feet if it's 1,500 instead of 1,200?
I'm sorry, you're asking me or ask John?
John.
He's the expert.
Well, the difference is that I disagree with the statements by the wind farm developers. The Pollution Control Board regulations cap the maximum noise at 48 decibels. And what you could have, if you reduce the standard to just 1,200 feet and don't say anything about the 40 decibels, or you let it be 1,200 feet regardless of how many wind turbines are in the proximity of that dwelling, you could be increasing the noise level from something less than 30 decibels to 48 decibels, which is 18 decibels, and an increase of 10 decibels is generally perceived as doubling the noise. So the point is, you're going to get a lot of complaints from non-participating landowners about the increase in noise. In fact, I think you'll get complaints from non-participating landowners with the 1,500 feet, because they're still going to get, in some instances, a doubling of the noise level. And in the discussion at the zoning board, I think, decided that that was a reasonable increase, but nothing more than that. Frankly, I don't know that other counties even consider noise level when they set these separations. The model ordinance doesn't even talk about noise in regards to separation. It just gives you dimensions. And nobody else includes anything about, the noise increase for their separation. But the one county, Livingston County, that goes three times the turbine height, which would result generally in more than 1,300 feet, even that in some instances would result in more than doubling the noise that those existing rural residents are in fact going to experience. So that's the difference.
Is it common to have the same distance of from turbine to turbine, regardless of where the turbine is placed?
Well, as far as I'm aware, nobody regulates the spacing of turbines.
Okay.
The turbine-to-turbine dimensions.
Okay. So, but this... Okay. Let me rephrase. Is the setback the same, regardless of where the position of the turbine is?
Generally, they'll have one set standard for separation to a non-participating dwelling, and one set... Some will have, then, a different standard to the participating dwellings.
Okay.
I think there are some counties that don't even distinguish between the two. Did I answer your question?
Yeah, better than I asked it, I think.
It was helpful to me.
I guess what I'm getting at is within a given wind farm area, you don't have one setback if one part of the area, another setback someplace else, and something in between in a third spot.
Well, that would be up to the county, I suppose. If there were a reason that could be justified, that's always possible. These are just special use permit standard conditions, so they can be waived in any case or for any individual turbine if the justification is there.
So is it conceivable that when we get individuals seeking permits coming into your office, that there may be extenuating circumstances that determine one setback in one case and another setback in someplace else?
I'm anticipating that might happen. It's something the county is going to have to be, very careful in reviewing to make sure you treat. You hardly ever get the same instance twice, but you want to be consistent as much as possible. So that will be the task, is to be consistent while respecting, any peculiarities that attach to any given situation.
Mr. Langenhead. Use your microphone, please.
I have two comments. A decibel regulation of sound is like any sound control ordinance. We have grave difficulties in proving, litigating, and dealing with that. A distance is measurable and definite. There's no argument about it. And the other comment that I wish to make is that our staff, the Zoning Board of Appeals, and countries where they have had wind power for a long period of time have distance requirements comparable to this 1,500 feet or more, and cutting below shouldn't be done lightly.
Kurtz.
John, aren't there also waivers for non-participating landowners who could waive that if in negotiation with the wind farm? Hasn't that happened in other areas where, like, Horizon has worked with non-participating dwellings to literally work a contract with them for shorter distances?
It's allowable in the ordinance, in the amendment that's before you, that would allow that. I assume it's happened elsewhere, but I don't know of any specific instances.
Thank you.
Mr. Mosher.
I've got a farm in Ford County that another wind company is offering an option on, and I had a question from the owner about how many they could put on a 240-acre farm, which is a square 160 and an 80 that runs an L to the south of where the 160 is, and there's a house right on the quarter line in the 160. And I cannot figure out their setbacks by his definition of 3 would be the most they could put on that farm. I wonder if one of these wind people here can explain to me how something in that situation would be configured, and whether it would take, would 1,500 feet work, or do they have to be 12? I don't know what the ordinance is in Ford County.
Do one of the developers want to respond?
That's what's going to happen on a 240-acre farm that's an 80 and 160 that parallels the other one. Like, you've got a square half mile, and then you've got one leg that comes off of it that's a half by a quarter.
I don't know that the Ford County ordinance either. I don't.
Can you use the microphone, please?
Sure.
I also am not familiar with the Ford County ordinance. I'm not familiar with the parcel that you're talking about. But what I will say is that if you were to take, would you say, 240 acres with no home on it whatsoever, and you look at a 1,200-foot setback from, well, I guess you're not going to factor in the 1,200 feet from a home. If you look at it and just factor in the setbacks from a non-participating property line, you're looking at about one turbine per every 80 to 100 acres for a 1.65 to 2.3 megawatt turbine. You start throwing homes in there and start having setbacks from homes, that number is going to go down significantly. The larger your setbacks from homes, the fewer turbines you're likely to have.
Well, that place has got a house on it that's been sold off, and I'm assuming they're using 1,200-foot setbacks if they could deal with that house because it's right on the quarter line and the 160 on the road.
Yeah, it's difficult for me to envision, in my head, but I guess the only figure I can give you is that one turbine to every 80 to 100 acres that we typically see it for a turbine density.
Mr. Jones?
John, I might have asked you this before, but do we have you talked to the developers that have any of them indicated that the 1,500 setback they would not develop here in Champaign County if we had that much of a setback, or is it that much of a problem?
They haven't told me that, but it's been reported to me that they've told board members that.
That would nix the deal if we had that much of a setback?
Yeah.
Is that true, Mr. Dester? Is this a deal breaker?
I can't. Can he speak up, please?
Or sit next to Mr. Holtz and use his microphone. I feel like a teacher again.
It doesn't make it a deal breaker, but what it does is it significantly impacts the number of turbines that we would be able to locate in a particular wind project area. If, for example, talking about our specific project, we have half of it or a two-thirds of it is located in Vermilion County and a third of it is located in Champaign County. Our setbacks over there are 1,000 feet from the dwellings, and it's a much less expensive permitting process. They don't have zoning, so naturally it just goes to say. But as a developer, we're going to be looking at the cost to build, the efficiency, and the wind resource across our project area. And every time you add another 100 feet or 200 feet or whatever, that takes out areas that we could otherwise put a turbine in a good wind resource area, and it could significantly reduce the actual locations that we could put turbines in our project area, and thus encourage to put more in Vermilion County, or because their requirements are shorter distances, and thus we will automatically have more locations that would be approved on that side of the county line versus this side of the county line. So all it does is we would look at location, spread out what's the wind resource, and where are we capable. And if we're capable of putting more turbines in the better wind resource area, that's what we'd like to do. But if those locations are not there, then we will have to go where the locations are available.
Mr. Holtz, you want to add anything?
I would echo what John said. I would also stress that as you increase your setbacks, you're going to be thinning your turbine density a little bit. So you're going to have fewer turbines, as John said, in a given area. That's going to spread your array out. So you're going to have fewer turbines over the same amount of area. It's going to add to your infrastructure costs, your cabling, potentially your roads. So you're going to have less of a revenue stream because you're going to have less turbines, and you're going to have more infrastructure cost. So it does impact the economics of a project by increasing the setbacks. Now, whether it's a deal killer or not, I guess every project's going to have to weigh that after they map out an area, plot the setbacks on a map, and see where they can site wind turbines. Our project is similar to Invenergy's in that we are operating in two different counties. I would say probably two-thirds of our project is located in Piatt County, a third's located in Champaign County. So by adding setbacks, distances to setbacks, you're thinning your turbine density, increasing infrastructure costs, and eliminating turbines, quality turbine sites from a given area.
Mr. Hall and then Mr. Langenheim.
Just for the committee's information, we looked at one area, one representative rural area, one of the three areas where wind farms have been proposed in Champaign County. We went outside the area so that we were including a more representative area. We counted up the number of homes, total homes, because we didn't know which homes would be participating or not. We counted up the total number of miles of streets within that area, thinking that a ratio of how many homes per mile would give us an idea of how many times these separations might be at issue. And for that area, we averaged one home per half mile. One home per half mile. And which seems like a very low density of dwellings, and it's not apparent to me how a density like that is going to be a big problem in regards to these separations when you only have one home per half mile on average. But these wind farms are such unique creations that, you really can't analyze this because the developers will tell you they don't really even know where they're going to put the turbines until they're far into the project. I mean, they have a general idea, but nothing specific. So it's something real difficult to try and get a handle on. But it's obvious that, there's not a lot of homes out there where they're looking at. But that's the best we could come up with at this point.
That's in Compromise Township.
Part of it.
You didn't do anything at Broadlands or up in Newcomb.
Mr. Langenheim, you were next.
Increasing the offset will indeed impact the efficiency and profitability of the wind farm. But the purpose of the setback is to protect the householder in the enjoyment and existence in their property. And we represent people, not windmills.
You don't know what the mix is between somebody that's bought a building site off a farm or whether there's an owner-operator on living on those farms or whether it's a rental unit. It would make a huge
difference,
Ralph, if you had that number, especially in those three townships that we're talking about, which are basically Compromise and Raymond and Ayers. I don't know what the mix is up around Newcomb Township because I haven't spent as much time up there as I have the other two, but it's not like all those homes are owned by somebody that doesn't have some attachment to the rest of the real estate it sits on.
I would consider that all beside the point. What we're considering is the impact of a wind tower on somebody living in a house. And whether they're an owner-operator of a farm, or whether it's a summer house, or whether it's an itchy-scratchy PhD, they're all people.
Ms. Ammons.
Just in light of the discussion that listening to, the responsibility of this committee is to pass an ordinance that protects the interests of the people in Champaign County and allows for the development of wind farms. And based on what has, I looked at the sample ordinance, the consideration I have not clarified outside of is going to impact revenues from the wind farm developers, thus revenues at some point to tax-based revenues. But how do we address the issues that have been raised by participants, other non-participating families? And I think that's the greater concern for those non-participating families to be considered in light of this ordinance. And the 1,500 feet I thought was reasonable, but of course I'm not a developer, and I don't live in a rural community. So is there a way for us to amend this ordinance so that the non-participating farms would have the 1,500 feet and those participating would have the 1,200?
Answer that?
Well, the ordinance that came to you tonight required 1,500 feet separation to non-participating dwellings and only 1,000 to participating dwellings.
Okay, so that's what the 1,000 is.
Yeah.
Okay.
And as far as I know, no one has disagreed with that 1,000.
It's the 1,500 that we have a problem with. Okay.
Call the question.
Question's been called. You want to have a roll call vote?
Yes.
Call the roll.
Clarify, we're voting on the 1,200 or are we voting on the whole measure?
No, it's just the first motion that was made by Mr. Kurtz, which is adjusting the 1,500 feet down to 12. Good.
Okay. Ms. Anderson.
This is what's affecting the non-participating.
Mr. Dennett.
Yes.
Ms. Ammons?
No.
Mr. Jones?
Yes.
Mr. Langenheim?
No.
Mr. Kurtz?
Yes.
Mr. Mosier?
Yes.
Mr. Schrader?
Yes.
Ms. Wysocki?
No. That motion carries. All right. What's your second motion, Mr. Kurtz?
Second motion, page 75-9. I'd like to change that to read at least 1.1 times the height separation above ground base of a wind farm tower to any of the following.
Motion's been made and by Mr. Kurtz, seconded by Mr. Mosier. Discussion.
I would like an explanation of why we're changing this.
Why are we changing this?
Well, as you heard before, Carol, they were talking about pipelines and water mains and pipelines. In essence, first, they have stated that they were not going to put turbines in the Manlow gas storage, but that they may be putting turbines where pipelines run, outside. 1,200 feet separation is, in fact, from my research and from what I hear from all of the other developers, 1,200 feet isn't something that they've seen in any of their developments. Besides the fact that they've worked with the gas pipeline companies that have allowed them to put it at 1.1 times the height of the turbine. So what we're saying here, if the turbine is 500 feet tall to the tip of the blade, then it would be 1.1 times that height that would be separated from the pipeline, which has been done in almost all of the other developments. In fact, all the developments that I know of. John, do you have any? You have heard it further from some others. I've heard mostly none.
No, I don't know that anybody else has gas well injection wellheads like Champaign County has. The attachment C that was included in the memo did not go as far as this motion. This motion would let you place a wind farm tower within 1.1 times the total height of a gas injection well head. And frankly, I hope you don't do that. This is why I prepared attachment C. It separates the distance to pipelines out from the distance to well heads. Wellhead is above ground. It can be hit by flying debris. Pipeline is underneath the ground. It can't be hit. It would seem very unlikely that it would ever get disturbed.
Can the motion be changed to protect those exposed versus those that are underground and use that same?
Well, that's what's outlined for you in attachment C. So I don't know if you could actually move attachment C to the memo. Page 44.
Page?
44.
Thank you.
Which does, it removes the 1,200 feet separation to a gas pipeline or hazardous liquid pipeline or to any easement for an underground water main or the water main. It does reduce that to 1.1 times, as you just suggested, but it retains the 1,200 feet separation to any wellhead or other above-ground fixture that's accessory to a gas pipeline.
Mr. Langenheim?
I'd like to propose some changes to your motion. In items A, B, A, C, and D, wherever the word pipeline appears, it should be preceded by underground, and item B should be removed. Any above-ground valve, place where you insert the pig to clean the pipeline, wellhead, anything that sticks up above the ground can be hit by flying debris, and if it is hit by flying debris, it's very likely to ignite. And if it ignites, then everything else is going to go off like a string of firecrackers.
Is that part of the motion? Okay.
Well,
I would accept that we remove above ground.
Just the below ground portions.
That we will have 1.1 times
above
the height.
Remains intact.
I would amend that.
Well, let's back up just a minute.
Okay.
Can I get a clarification from the state's attorney about whether we can basically adopt item 7 from alternative C into the special use permit?
I think you can. Why would you think that you can't?
I just want to be sure.
Okay.
Barb, can I ask a question?
Yes.
Granted, this is my first night of being in depth with this, other than having read some of it, but, I mean, is this just my observation, or do we have absolutely no clue? I mean, on a lot of this stuff, it's just our speculation about what could, maybe, should, would, could possibly happen on, you know, some nth possibility. I mean, do we have any data to back up any of this stuff? In other words, about the gas lines, if we're the only one in the country putting this thing in. I mean, do we have any real basis other than, you know, it could? I mean, you know what I'm saying? I don't see anything that backs it up for me. You know, 1,000, 1,200, why not make it 2 miles? I don't have any idea. I mean, I just feel we're flying by the seat of our pants here with, you know, maybe it's because it's new, I realize, but, you know, I'm sorry, there's not an expert here that's convinced me on a lot of this stuff one way or the other. You know, let's be honest, I don't think we have any idea.
Mr. Langenheim? Stick to using your microphone, Mr. Langenheim.
My undergraduate degree is in geological engineering, which included taking courses in petroleum production, petroleum refining, et cetera, the engineering aspects of the oil business.
So
I'm not done yet. And I have had experience working as a consultant in the oil fields in Illinois within the last couple of decades. I am a member of the American Association of Petroleum Geologists, and I read the trade journals, which have to do with what's going on in the oil business. And I do have some experience, and I speak from that experience.
I mean, I guess that's fine, but I just don't see
that you don't want to have above ground wellheads or fittings along pipelines exposed to.
I guess, you know, again, so much as is just speculating, all your credentials aside, but I don't see a thing here. And I guess I'm just previewing what could happen at the full board meeting when we all look at this and really start digging in. I wish more people would have heeded Pius's email today and came and listened, but I'm just previewing, I think, some of the questions you might get when it comes to 27 of us trying to figure this out and all of our expertise that we bring into the room. So if there's any factual things that can be brought before this gets here,
Some incidents, I'll be glad to Google them up and bring them to the next meeting.
It's funny you say that. I've been sitting here on Google all night, and almost all of the noise issues have been overseas. I found very little in this country. I mean, of issues or studies, or most of them are in the United Kingdom and Australia. I just found that interesting. Same with the gas thing. When I Googled that, didn't find a thing.
You're going to get the noise articles from places that have had windmills for some time, and we're just beginning to get them, but they've been all over Europe for a long time.
And I'm not arguing one way or the other. I'm just saying, you know, trying to add some element of what you're going to get next week about so much of this is just 7, 8, 10 of a speculation on, you know, what our gut feeling is. It may be right, may be wrong. I don't know.
Mr. Mosier?
I'm going to withdraw my second. if that motion is amended, what Ralph wants. You have to get somebody else.
Okay, so let's back up on the parliamentary procedures here. We're withdrawing item 9 from page 75 and substituting item 7 from page 44. Is that what you're moving?
74?
Attachment C.
On page 44?
Yes.
Not really. Pardon? Oh, no. So on the other hand, you know, we have to make a plan for the future, too, whatever that means.
John, the second part of that, the separation may be reduced upon submission of a private waiver signed by the owner of the electrical transmission line or communication tower or the relevant public street maintenance jurisdiction?
Actually, you'd want to provide for the relevant jurisdiction of any of the above. So I did not intentionally leave out pipeline there.
Who could sign the waiver to shorten that number?
The owner of the...
The pipeline?
Yeah.
So we're talking about the pipeline company can sign a waiver with the wind developer to put a 1.1 to any of the wellheads as well? Is that what we're saying in this?
7 is only referring to the pipeline itself, not any above ground portions.
Okay, this is just a pipeline. But this number 7 is all underground. Is that what we're talking about here?
In regards to pipelines.
So in other words, it would be 1.1 times the distance from an underground pipeline. Is that what this says?
Well, going back to Ralph's comment, I don't think we actually specify in our definition of pipeline that it has to be underground. In fact, thank goodness there are no above ground pipelines that I'm aware of in our...
So we're not talking about anything above ground on this. So 1.1 would be fine. We're not talking about above...
Wait a minute. We need... If this is a substitute motion, it needs to get on the table with a second. And so far, we don't have those conditions.
Okay.
Now, is that your intention to
move
this?
Yeah, my intention would be to use number 7 if it's stated as such that it's all underground, that 1.1 separation.
Everything on page 44 is meant to go as a unit. 7 goes with 9. That's
seven
the intent. Now,
nine.
You can change that if you want.
Oh, wait a minute. Okay.
But it's intended to be a unit.
Okay, now we're talking about 1,200 from the exterior above. You can't separate 7 from 9. It has to be on the same motion?
Sure. You can do whatever you want.
Thank you.
It was originally presented to you as a couple that goes together. And so just be specific in your motion.
Well, we can take 7 and 9 separately, can't we?
Sure, you can vote on them separately.
So I'd like to make that motion that 7 replace.
What's that?
I want to withdraw my other motion and state a new motion that would bring number 7 instead of, what number would that be on?
It was number 9 on page 75.
Okay.
Number 9 on 75, but that...
Number 7 on page 44 is an amended version of number 7.
Number 9.
That is on page...
75.
Number 8. 9 is at the
yes.
bottom. Yes. But the bulk of it is on 76.
Right.
Right.
The part that I was addressing is on page 76.
Right. You're addressing B on 76, correct?
Right. That's
okay.
Right.
So if we remove B and only use
and
the below ground pipeline,
put underground in front of all
you would
pipeline.
Be okay with the 1.1 if it's underground pipeline.
let's. We need to get a clear motion on the floor. Come on.
I apologize. I'd like to make a motion that number 7 on page 44 be placed.
Number 9 on page 75.
With 9 on the 75 while eliminating number D on page 76.
Replacing it, sure.
Can we do that?
We can do that.
So in other words, we're just going to talk about right now this motion for underground pipelines. Am I correct, John? If we remove B and add 7 to 9 on page 44 to 75.
If you remove subparagraph 9B on page 76.
75.
No, it's on page 76.
Okay.
Yeah, on page 76B.
And amend paragraph 7 on page 75 to paragraph 7 that's in attachment C.
On 44, that would be my motion.
Okay.
Okay.
And what that would do then, so people know what they're being asked to vote on, it removes any greater separation for above ground fixtures related to pipelines.
Yes.
Okay, we need a second to this motion. Seconded by Ms. Anderson. Okay, discussion. Mr. Schrader.
I think I'm still a little confused with this because alternatives, attachment C is the alternative, I think is what you're trying to do. Because if you're going to set, because you've got language that's in 7 and 9, that if you don't change both of them, you're going to have an ordinance that's a mess because it's going to say two different things. Now, are you... If I get this, I'm trying to get this right, Mr. Kurtz. You want to amend this to where anything a pipeline below ground is 1.1 to the height. Anything above.
Well, we haven't even discussed that yet. But right now we're just discussing below ground, correct?
But that's part of the ordinance that it. Are you going to get to this other part?
Yeah.
Okay, you just want to do...
Right now, I want to make sure that we have at least the below-ground pipelines, 1.1, the height of the turbine.
So 6.1.4C, number 7, you're replacing with attachment C. That would be on page 75. Is that correct? You're opting for, instead of what's in... presented in the ordinance tonight as number 7, you want alternative C, or the attachment C, the alternative. You're switching those two?
We're switching B or C?
No, I'm not talking about 9. I'm not talking about 9. I'm talking about 7.
Page 44?
On page 75. And the alternative is on page 44. What's presented to us is on page 75. The alternative is on page 44. Okay, you want to swap 7 out?
Yes.
Okay. Then that's the motion. Is that how you understand
that's
it?
Yes.
What I understand.
Okay. Okay, very good. And right. You will deal with 9 then?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, I just want that for clarification. Okay. Thank you.
Any other discussion? Okay. Call the roll.
Okay. Ms. Anderson?
Yes.
Mr. Dennett?
Yes.
Ms. Ammons?
Yes.
Mr. Jones?
Yes.
Mr. Langenheim?
Yes.
Mr. Kurtz?
Yes.
Mr. Mosier?
Yes.
Mr. Schrader?
Yes.
Ms. Wysocki?
Yes. That motion carries. It's the least we could do.
Okay. May I continue?
By all means. We're in the middle of this.
Thank you. Obviously, we've discussed the safety of the above ground that Mr. Langenheim has a great concern about, and I share concerns about pipelines that, wellheads that are extend outside of the ground. Now, it shows a 1,200-foot separation from the exterior above farm. Now, the 1.1 height would probably be what, John, in total feet? 600 and...
It's a maximum of 550.
550 feet. On one side, we have Ralph safety, and I understand that. On the other side, we have developers who feel 1,200 is too far. So I'd like to compromise and put it at 800 feet.
800, did you say?
800 feet. Instead of 550 for 1.1 or 1,200, I'd like to sort of split the difference and bring up 800 feet from a above wellhead rather than 550 or 1,200. Is that satisfactory with you?
No.
Okay. What would you suggest?
Well, I go along with the staff and the Zoning Board of Appeals, the people that ran through this thing, who came up with 1,500 feet.
Can I interrupt this for a minute?
Oh, excuse me.
I believe we have the essence of a proposal here. I didn't hear a second to this. Mr. Dennett. Okay, thank you. Continue, Mr. Langenheim. I'm sorry, we were talking about splitting the difference.
Okay.
And why you don't think that's a good idea.
Staff, ZBA, drawing upon a great deal of information, much of it derived from places where they have long experience with windmills, says 1,200 feet, and I'm willing to agree with them.
John, is the staff say 1,200 feet, or did the ZBA say 1,200 feet? I don't remember the staff saying 1,200 feet.
Well, staff proposed it. The ZBA accepted it. I am not aware of any wind farm developer complaining about the 1,200 feet separation to above ground fixtures.
Is that true?
You want me to answer that?
Let's ask this. Are you going to complain about this?
I think the only thing that I said, and I tried to hit this in my my address to the board, the only thing that I would suggest is that you add the same capability of waiver that you add for the pipeline to this provision that's been proposed by the staff. So I have here a 25-page document that we basically have with another pipeline company on one of our other projects that outlines exactly what they want us to do, how they want us to cross a pipeline with a piece of equipment or an underground cable. So I guess I agree with this gentleman over here, is that this is the type of issue that really the pipeline company is going to dictate to us what is safe and what is not. And then as a backstop, I believe, John, there's the pipeline impact radius for these above-ground wellheads that you can use is kind of a minimum. So I would suggest adding that waiver and then having the minimum be the whatever the pipeline impact radius is that you have for the above-ground wellheads.
And then my question to you, Tim, is adding that waiver leaves it up solely to a decision between the wind farm developer and the pipeline company, and the county has to accept that waiver.
It leaves it up to them only up to the distance that's already been dictated by the county for other land uses, which is, as I understand them, the pipeline impact radius. In other words, the county already has a restriction on how close other land uses can be to the above-ground wellheads. Is that right?
Well, in most instances, for example, in the wellheads that I'm familiar with, which are in the Manlove gas storage field, the pipeline impact radius associated with those wellheads is less than 1.1 times the height of.
So other land uses
turbines
can be less than 1.1, that distance of 1.1?
Yes.
So I guess to answer that question, then, yet up to that distance, it would be up to the pipeline company to dictate how close a safe distance is to their wellhead for that particular use. After all, they do have the lease over that property, and we can't do anything on that property without their approval. So I guess what I'm getting is that we typically defer to the expertise of the pipeline company when it comes to what is safe in the vicinity of their pipeline.
Mr. Kurtz?
I certainly think that's reasonable. If the pipeline company certainly doesn't want its assets or resources to be destroyed, they certainly, I think that waiver certainly should be included in that, in my motion, that would allow them to negotiate a safe distance under the, now we're talking about what the original 1,200 feet, then. We can go back and just add a waiver, can't we, to that, John?
You could copy the last two sentences from 7.
Last two sentences.
From paragraph 7 on page 44.
Right. We're talking about 7 on page 75?
44.
I'm sorry. The last two sentences. Separation may be reduced upon submission. Private waivers by the owned. Okay, there we go.
Modifying it to just simply refer to the gas pipeline or hazardous liquid pipeline, and just tack that on to 9.
Okay.
Deleting 9A and 9D as is shown there.
Okay, that's what I'd like to do. I'd like to make it 9A. Can we do it that way?
It could just be one paragraph.
One paragraph. Add that one paragraph from number 7. This separation may be reduced upon submission. So the rest of that for the above. Well, that would be.
Is that agreeable to the seconder? All right. Any other, Jan?
This is just a question. My hearing is probably impaired. I thought I heard you saying something contradictory at one point, saying there are like a number of wellheads, and then I thought I heard you say later we don't have many. Could you tell me how many? I mean, do we have a lot of above ground wellheads?
Yes, we do.
Okay. I thought I heard you say that, and then I thought later you indicated there weren't that many.
Mr. Langenhorn.
I understand this correctly, that this, in this case, the clearance between the wellhead and the windmill will be negotiated between the pipeline company and the wind farm developer without any standards set by the county.
It's going to still say 1,200 feet.
No, that's correct, Ralph, although when it gets down to the minimum of the pipeline impact radius, I think the county could always argue for that, because this is a special use permit, and you could always require that as a standard condition.
So ZBA and staff arrived at 1,200 feet. From whence did that figure derive?
Well, again, Tim, correct me if I'm wrong. When this issue was raised in the public hearing, we sort of decided that, well, okay, if 1,200 people in the public hearing were arguing for something greater than 1,600 feet, just based on the newspaper reports of the debris field from these catastrophic turbine disasters, which, you know, how frequently does that happen? I don't know. But it seemed a little extreme, and so the next defensible position seemed to be, well, if a home can be within 1,200 feet, perhaps a wellhead could be within 1,200 feet of a turbine. And as I recall, Tim Poltz and I discussed that outside of a public hearing, and that's what we agreed to go with at that time. I don't recall the waiver being discussed then, but it may have been. Tim may have recommended it, and I may have just overlooked it at that time.
That figure itself is in the nature of a compromise.
Yeah, because there is no data on these things. There's absolutely no data.
Mr. Holtz, do you want to respond?
Yeah, I guess I would just say that the 1,200 foot would be the default, under this, would be the default distance. So if a pipeline company didn't want to grant a waiver, if they thought it was, you know, dangerous to grant a waiver, the default distance would be 1,200 feet. So, you know, this isn't the typical type of thing that you pay for. It's something that, you know, the pipeline company has obviously a vested interest in their facility. If they believe, either you work with them to route cabling, to route equipment over, under their facilities, we're basically letting them dictate to us what is safe and what is not safe, because nobody knows their facilities better than they do. So I guess my point was that, you know, 1,200 feet seems reasonable as the default, unless the pipeline company tells us, look, you know, for whatever reason, there's no concern on our part in siting a turbine at 1,000 feet, at 800 feet. And I guess the other point that I was trying to get at was the pipeline impact radius that the county seems to already have in place. John, obviously you know that better than I do, but that's going to set some minimum distance as well.
Mr. Langenheim?
Where did the 1,600-foot figure come from?
News reports of wind turbine accidents.
News reports of wind turbine accidents. Those sound like facts in the field, right?
Well, news reports, they were taken off of the web. I don't know that they, you know, news on the web.
Yeah.
Who knows what is news on the web and what is just numbers on the web.
Yeah, well, but this is, the rest of this is what we agreed to as reasonable. I'm not so much concerned with the pipeline company and the wind farm company. I'm concerned with the effect on people in the area, and I don't like the vision of the top of one of those wells being knocked off in the middle of a high storm and catching on fire, and the entire contents of the gas storage thing going off like a Roman candle. And pipeline accidents with natural gas like that occur with periodically. They are big and they're not much fun.
Mr. Dennis?
Through all this, did anybody ever bother to ask the People's Gas Company that owns the Manlove storage field what they think?
Many times, and they were unwilling to say.
Okay, fair enough.
May I ask either of you two, since you represent companies, do you have any location where a gas field is involved? And how have you handled
it? Me?
No, I'm asking them. And how have you handled that?
Yeah, we do not have a location where you have a cluster of injection sites like you have here at the Manlove gas storage area. We do have, as I said, a high-pressure 36-inch gas main running through one of our projects that does happen to have above-ground appurtenances along the way. So you'll have basically, as you said, where you put in the pig to inspect the line. Basically, they have an iron tank that they insert into the line to inspect the line for any type of defect. And so while there's no injection sites like you have here, there are above-ground appurtenances along the way.
What's the setback?
1.1 times the height of the turbine.
question. I think we've. Is there any? I won't ask anybody not to discuss it if they feel we can call the question. Okay, let's call the question.
Excuse me. This is my meeting.
Yes, ma'am.
Question's been called. Call the roll.
Mr. Chair, can we clarify the actual motion that we're voting on, please?
Oh, I was so hoping you wouldn't ask that.
I know. So the rest of the public.
Okay. What we're... Can you state it?
Go ahead. No, you're going to hand it off to me.
Al, check me out here.
Okay.
It's looking at page 44, the motion is...
Correct.
...to adopt 9, the revised paragraph 9, which deletes A... deletes D, and adds the last two sentences from 7.
On page 44.
On page 44.
Can you read it for us?
Sure.
So the revised 9.
We still have underground for the pipelines?
We don't have that, no. At least 1,200 feet separation from the exterior above ground base of the wind farm tower to any wellhead or other above-ground fixture that is accessory to a gas pipeline or to any valve or other above-ground fixture for any hazardous liquid pipeline, provided, however, that if the relevant pipeline impact radius required by paragraph 434H is greater than 1,200 feet, then that pipeline impact radius shall be the minimum separation of any of the above, period. This separation may be reduced upon submission of a private waiver signed by the owner of said pipeline. The private waiver must specify the agreed minimum separation.
Okay. Call the roll.
Ms. Anderson. Dennett.
Yes.
Ms. Ammons.
Yes.
Mr. Jones.
Yes.
Mr. Langenheim.
No.
Mr. Kurtz.
Yes.
Mr. Mosier.
Yes.
Mr. Schrader.
Yes.
Ms. Wysocki.
Yes. That motion carries.
I have one more.
Go for it.
Under noise, I'm not sure what page that's on, John. But I'd like to replace the noise with the Illinois Pollution Control Board standards applying to all noise regulations. Can we do that?
That's the way it's written.
Is that the way it's written?
Yes.
All of the noise ordinances, even the decibels?
There's no decibels in this now.
Sorry, I'm a little confused on that one. I thought,
well, on page 85.
I'm sorry, what page?
On page 85 is subparagraph 614I, standard conditions for allowable noise level.
Page 85, 6.
Paragraph 614I. And this amendment has only ever referenced the Illinois Pollution Control Board noise regulations. The only time 40 decibels was ever proposed was in that attachment B, and that was defeated earlier, so 40 decibels is not mentioned anywhere in the proposed amendment.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Are there any other items people want to talk about?
Number 5 on 79. Number 1, soil is going to be ripped at least 18 inches. I think that's the decision that the owner of the property should make with the developer. I don't know what business it is. Enforce it. And conditions. I really don't see any sense in any of that. Under 1 and 2. to that section, or three. We haven't got time to go out there and see if they ripped it 18 inches deep, and I don't.
So is it your intention to have item 5B, well, actually, they're taking all of item 5B out?
1, 2, and 3.
Is that a motion, Mr. Mosher? Is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by Mr. Dennett. Yes, 5B, 1, 2, 3. Discussion. Ms. Anderson.
Well, I guess this is a question for Steve and Cynthia Farms. Maybe you couldn't enforce it, but would it be a guideline for farmers to negotiate with them what they'd like to have done?
Farmers smart enough to know their farm, to know whether you got to rip it out once or twice or three times. I don't know that you could require them to do that if they haven't got the equipment to do it. You've got to have a heck of a tractor and not a very big chisel plow to get down 18 inches in rutted ground. And I can speak from that from experience. Because I took over a farm that Wandell had rented for trees for 7 years. And we ended up ripping that thing 5 different times to fill those tree holes in. And they weren't in. They were in there with a cat, trying to push those things out in the mud. And you got to wait till it's perfect, and then you got to do it 2 or 3 times, and then a fall later, you're going to have to go back and do it again.
Mr. Hall.
Yeah, the whole idea of 5 there was just to backstop in case it's not covered in the lease. But in fact, if 1, 2, and 3 aren't needed, then none of 5 is needed, and you may as well just delete that whole subparagraph. Because paragraphs 1, 2, and 3 are the really substantial parts of it anyhow.
Mr. Langenheim?
I'd like to ask Steve whether his purpose is to remove the specific requirements by which the land is to be restored, or whether you're removing the requirement that the land be restored.
The land will restore itself, Ralph.
No,
it's going to freeze and thaw, and eventually it's going to be gone anyway. But it's got to be ripped more than once in 2 different seasons before you're ever going to get rid of all of it.
Okay. So you would just let the operator walk off and leave it without the landowner having
that is
report.
Something that the owner of that land can negotiate with a pipeline company. Some people want to rip it once, and some people are going to ask for it 5 or 6 times.
A general statement to the effect that the land shall be restored to tillability or something like that should be in there, shouldn't it?
There is something
there
like
is something
that
in there, John, isn't it?
When we talk about
decommissioning.
Decommissioning. Thank you.
Well, that's a completely different topic.
Mr. Weibel.
Well, I would suggest that Mr. Motor says it's up to the farmer. Why don't we say that? Say that these mitigation of soil compaction rutting shall be decided upon between the decision between the farmer, the owner of the land, and the operator of the wind farm. Say that. And then if Mr. Mosher owns a farm, he likes his rust the way they are, he can leave that with. Doesn't like him, he can ask the Mr. Wind Farm to get rid of him.
Would you be okay with a statement to that effect? With the seconder?
I can't make a motion, so you have to have somebody.
Well, we're talking. Well, we've already got one motion on the floor here. Let's deal with these. Ms. Ammons.
I just want to ask Mr. Hall, as he and the ZBA worked on putting this together, other ordinances you looked at,
what was the purpose of the mitigation of soil compacting and rutting in the other ordinances?
No other ordinance talks about that. No other ordinance talks about repairing tile lines. No other ordinance talks about putting electrical cables far enough into the ground that they won't be at risk of being ripped up by farm operations. No other ordinance talks about restoring terracing or anything like that. No other ordinance is concerned with farmland mitigation.
Mr. Langenheim.
Steve, how about item B, that first paragraph, take the as follows off of it and then all the specific stuff, unless specifically provided for otherwise in the wind farm lease, the applicant shall mitigate soil compaction and rutting for all areas of farmland that were traversed with vehicles and construction equipment or where topsoil is replaced in open trenches, period, and leave that up to litigation and negotiation between the landowner and the company.
I have a problem with that.
Of course. You do?
No.
No, well, why don't we do it that way then?
Well, I'll agree with you for once.
Well, actually, it's not the first time. It's happened before.
I'd accept that as a substitute.
With the seconder?
Second, please.
Okay. Thank you. Go ahead.
Well, as your zoning administrator, I would urge you not to put statements that don't establish clear requirements in the ordinance. And these statements that you're talking about establish, they don't establish any requirement on anybody. And I don't think they belong in the ordinance then.
Well, I'll go along with you and just move to delete the whole thing.
Point of order, there's two motions on the floor
right
now. Yeah,
I counted three here, but what difference does it make? Okay, let's back up. We've got, we've got a clause that that is 5B. And dropped items 1, 2, and 3. Okay, and that, I think, was the last. Yeah. And that was the last friendly amendment that we had until Mr. Langenheim came in with some additional wording. And I want to hold off on that so we can all get our heads around that. So let's deal with mitigation of soil compaction and rutting. Taking the B paragraph and dropping 1, 2, and 3. Okay. Call the roll. Paragraph B, number 5.
Here we go. Ms. Anderson. Mr. Dennett.
Yes.
Ms. Amons, I'm sorry.
No.
Okay. Mr. Jones.
Yes.
Mr. Langenheim.
Can you refresh me here? We're keeping A and B, but we're doing away with 1, 2, and 3? Yes.
My spot here. Here we go. Mr. Kurtz.
Yes.
Mr. Mosier.
Yes.
Mr. Schrader.
No.
Ms. Wysocki.
No. That motion passes 5-4. I had 5 yes and 4 no. Somebody else keeping tally? 5-4. Okay. Okay. Anything else?
So those were
deleted. Mr. Langenheim.
I can't hear you, Ralph.
Get closer to your microphone.
Just for the record, I move to reinstitute the map overlay.
Is that a motion?
That's a motion.
Is there a second? This basically brings back protest rights. Seems to fail for lack of a second. Mr. Dennett.
Did I not see it, or was decommissioning not in this?
Decommissioning is in there. It's on page 90 under paragraph Q. Although the real meat of decommissioning we've already got in our ordinance under the reclamation agreement, and so we didn't have to add very much with this.
90. Yes, Mr. Nudo.
Yeah, I'm concerned about the funding of the decommissioning. In today's world, an irrevocable letter of credit isn't as much as it was worth a long time ago. Mr. Yukin has provided other counties that funded the decommissioning up front or partially along the way, as opposed to in preference to an irrevocable letter of credit. Or you could do it with both. You could have an irrevocable letter of credit over a 12-year period for the amount, and 1/12 of the amount be taken in cash, and then reduce the irrevocable letter of credit each year until finally, after year 12, it is you have cash in hand. My concern is, are we sure we have the funding at the point in time they have to be decommissioned, so that we don't have an obsolete piece of equipment that is no longer efficient in what it's doing? And as I said before, Mr. Yukin provided, I think, to the ZBA examples of how it was funded in other counties. I'm confused about the 150%. It's an arbitrary number, I realize, but 150% doesn't take into consideration inflation over the 25 years. And the decommissioning could be 300% of what. I mean, I don't know what the relationship is between installing it and decommissioning it. So I think we need more help from the developers and some creative financing to make sure we have the money in hand at the point in time it's needed.
Mr. Kurtz.
Does that have to be in this ordinance? Can we work with that separately? Is there some way to do that, John?
Well, as long as you get it done before you have a wind farm application.
Why would you say that?
Why would we delay the issue? I mean, why wouldn't we put this concurrent with approving this?
Someone has a motion to make regarding that subject. We can certainly do that.
I spoke with a developer in Ford County about that project I'm involved with, and I asked that question about who's going to pay for this when those come out. His answer was that we're probably going to tear those old towers down in 25 years and use those same bases for a better, more efficient system. But this thing is not here for 25 years to go away. And I tend to think, after looking at what these articles in the Agri-News and some of the things that are happening in Indiana, that a lot of people are buying into that. I'm not sure it's that big a deal. I don't know how many of us are going to be around here 25 years from now to worry about it either. I know I'm not.
I plan on it. May I ask either of the developers, has your company been involved in a decommissioning effort yet?
Yeah, no decommissioning as of yet, but we typically will have a third-party engineering firm give us cost estimates of what the decommissioning costs would be at a present time and down the road. So when it comes to time to figure out what those costs are, we have a third-party engineering authority give us estimates of what the expected costs are, because nobody can look and say exactly what they are, but they give us expected costs from that standpoint.
And your company, assuming it's around in 25 years, will pay for the full decommissioning?
We would make sure that the funds are available for full decommissioning.
I would add that the owner of the company is responsible under the lease agreement, if they're solvent, to decommission the project using their own funds. So if somebody's owns and operates the facility, this decommissioning plan might guide how they need to do the decommissioning, but the funding of it would be done by the owner of the facility unless they're not solvent. That's the only way you're going to draw on, or they're unwilling to do the decommissioning for some reason. That's the only way you're going to draw on the actual security posted for the decommissioning plan. Most of the facilities, most of the decommissioning plans, the reclamation agreements, as you refer to it in this agreement that we've done, have been based on the irrevocable letter of credit. I would say, though, that if the county wants to leave its options open, you can just say a security will be posted by a method that's mutually acceptable to the applicant and the county.
Mr. Nudo?
Just a couple of questions now. You've said twice, if you're solvent. And so, you know, that's where the irrevocable letter of credit means less than the paper it's printed on.
No, because that's what the irrevocable letter of credit is in place for. So if the company is not, how these things work is the irrevocable letter of credit is in the county's hands, and it's with a financial institution. So that letter of credit's around even if the company is not. That's what it's for. So, and the other thing is that in a lot of the decommissioning plans that we've done, the county has the ability on either a yearly basis or some other time frame to switch financial institutions. Say if you had an inkling that the financial institution that was holding the irrevocable letter of credit was in trouble, you could actually switch whatever institution was holding that irrevocable letter of credit.
I just had a conversation with a financial guy in Chicago today, and in light of the Financial Times, banks and companies, you know, you have a letter of credit, there has to be backing behind it, a collateral position, with a bank, hopefully in its escrow. But if that bank goes under, and if things, you know, it's not just you that we have to worry about being solvent 25 years from now. It's the institution and who it's passed on to. Lots of strange things have happened in the last year where, you know, shareholders, stockholders of banks and bondholders of banks no longer have any worth in the paper that it was printed on.
No, that's true. I'm not disagreeing with you there. What I'm saying is that most of these reclamation agreements or funding agreements and the letters of credit specifically are set up so they're renewed annually, or I've even seen them renewed, you know, more frequently than annually. And they do that for exactly that reason. So if there's an institution that's in trouble, the county can step in and basically require that the letter of credit is posted with a different institution.
My only point is I think this issue is beyond the scope of expertise people in this room, that you need some financial people that would look at something. And again, that arbitrary number of 150% is a number that I'm not sure is valid in today's world. All I know is I've got a cell phone here that's 2 years old, and it's obsolete. And this energy technology will become obsolete over time, right? Right, Ralph? I'm not sure if it's 25 years or what. And then there will be a 500-foot turbine sitting on somebody's property that no longer, if what Steve says holds true, then yeah, then something else will take its place. But if something doesn't take its place, we've got to come up with, and I hope I'm here in 25 years, but if I'm not, I don't want to leave this to somebody else to solve. I suggest that we do an irrevocable letter of credit with a cash substitution for the first 12 years over the 12-year period, which is basically one half the life of the term of the lease, and you replace 1/12 of the irrevocable letter of credit over the 12 years. I have a level of confidence that that technology will stay before the 25-year lease expires. And then you can each year reduce the letter of credit by the amount you pay in cash and put in escrow. What I don't know is how much it should be. And if we have engineers that can come up with a number with inflation, that's the way to do it.
Mr. Schrader.
I'd like to see that in writing. And I'd also like at least a couple engineering studies or at least a couple engineering firms come up with some kind of quote on that, because I share the exact same conclusions as Mr. New, though. It's concerning to me that these irrevocable line of credits are used to be backed and used to be insured, but we know what happened to the insurance on that side, too. So I'd like to see something at like that in writing.
Mr. Kurtz.
I also share that concern. I'm wondering if there's a way to, since we've pretty well much adopted what we have here in front of us, to approve this part of the ordinance and hold an abeyance till our next ELOC meeting, because this is going to still be a 30-day protest period, and have an engineer bring us those numbers, and perhaps we can, before the board meeting of next month, add that to the ordinance? Is that possible? In other words, give us a month to investigate Mr. Nudo's proposition here and make a decision on adding that to the ordinance in next month's ELOC meeting.
You could amend the reclamation agreement requirements that are in the ordinance already with a stiffer set here in Q. You could do that, I believe. I'm just not clear what engineer we're going to get to provide us that information.
Well, I was just wondering if someone has that type of expertise that can tell us in 25 years what it's going to cost to decommission one of these big turbines.
Where would they get this expertise?
I'm sorry.
Where would they get this expertise?
Well,
since nobody
there,
is decommissioned.
There are wind farms that some are being replaced in California. I think they've been 12 or 15 years in development. Somebody must have some type of information on decommissioning those.
I think you. I think you would just have to simply every year or every 2 years. I think you should have the value of that letter of credit reviewed and updated, pegged to some cost index. That's the only way to do it. No one's going to be able to tell you what it's going to cost in 25 years, but everyone can tell you what it costs every 2 years to update it. And some ordinances do require, I hadn't gone that route because it's adding another burden that we're going to have to do. Every 2 years we're going to have to review the value and get a new letter of credit, but that's the only way to be certain.
Could we have Brad explain where he got those numbers?
Mr. Yukin.
The information I got that I gave Mr. Nudo was from Bureau County. I believe Mr. Pohl's here developing a project in Bureau County. And so my understanding, I spoke with Chris Tanarski, their zoning administrator in Bureau County. I used to work up that area, so I know Ms. Tanarski quite well. What they did was, from my understanding, I cannot speak for what they did with Mr. Pohl's project, but one of the projects she basically said they negotiate a figure with the wind company up front, prior to development, prior to the issuing of a building permit. They settle on a number. They have an engineer. I've seen their paperwork. There's an engineer that talks about the cost of decommissioning, the cost of removing the underground cables, the concrete, et cetera, and taking down those towers. And that figure is agreed upon in advance. And in some cases, that money was put into an escrow account cash. No line of credit. It was cash put into an account on an agreed-upon amount with the wind companies. I asked, have you ever had a wind company turn down and walk away from development in the county because of that? And the answer was no. They have never had a wind company turn it down. Now, in Mr. Pohl's case, maybe it was different what they did with their company, but in some instances they have done that where it's been upfront cash.
Can you get that information for us so we don't have to pay for somebody else to duplicate it?
I have the name of the engineering company that did it and a sample of what they've done and the calculation, so rough calculations. I mean, how the figures they used to come up with, removing cable, removing concrete, etc. I have those not with me tonight, no. Yes, I received a copy from Ms. Donarski of the agreement and the calculations and the engineering company that supplied those calculations.
Mr. Kurtz?
John, can that be a motion to put into this ordinance that we will have upfront negotiations before a special permit is issued on decommissioning and have the cash up front, just like Brad? Can we put that into this?
Point of order, you can't put a motion you can put a motion to have that prepared. You can't put that into the ordinance tonight.
You
can make a motion to have the information be prepared so that at the next meeting you can put it into the ordinance, but you can't put something in the ordinance that we don't know about.
Question about,
if you're going to do a letter of credit with somebody, why can't you do it with the owner and leave the county out of it?
And it was a big
step. The county is the beneficiary of the letter of credit.
Well, I got a farm I rent from the University of Illinois, and I have to give them a letter of credit saying that bank's going to guarantee the other half of that check if I can't write it for cash rent. That's an individual thing with every individual that farms for the University of Illinois.
Well, in this instance, the county wants to be in control of that letter of credit if there needs to be reclamation. And we can come back at the next meeting with the changes that are based on apparently what Bureau County does. But it's still not clear to me how Bureau County makes sure they have adequate funds in 25 years, but we can check into that for the next ELUC meeting.
Mr. Knott.
If this is the same Bureau County, the beauty of the Internet says that Bureau County Board has unanimously passed a 1.7 decommissioning plan with the Big Sky wind developers. Overview, decommission plan, which totals $1.7 million. What that broke down to was about $31,000 per turbine with a 57-turbine project. So just to give you an idea.
I don't know if that's the same Bureau County.
If you'd like me to comment on Bureau County, I can. I actually negotiated that decommissioning plan that you're referring to right there. I won't speak unless I'm asked a question of them. So.
Oh, of course, they want to hear you.
You know, as Brad and John and I were just discussing behind the scenes here, we've built two projects in Bureau County. We have a total of four that we've permitted in that county. We've done extensive work in that county. I know Chris Donarski very well. The first project that we did, the Crescent Ridge project, back in 2000, was required initially to post security in the form of cash escrow. The county later relented because it was a huge sticking point with us and our equity partner, and they decided to allow an irrevocable letter of credit. Every project that we've done since, the Providence Heights project, the Big Sky project, the Walnut Ridge project, have all been, the decommissioning plans have all been irrevocable letters of credit. Now, as this gentleman was just saying, there was a decommissioning plan that was negotiated with the county. We had engineering estimates basically presented to the county on a per-turbine basis. How this is done, though, typically in every county that I've worked in, and particularly in Bureau County, is that that decommissioning agreement and the amount of security that's posted and the method by which it's posted are negotiated between the county and the developer prior to the issuance of the building permit. So it's a stipulation it can be done two ways, either as a stipulation, either as a requirement to the special use permit. So before you're issued your special use permit, you actually have to have this signed decommissioning plan in hand that you've negotiated with the county and you've come up with a mutually acceptable form of credit. More cases than not, I've seen it actually be a stipulation to the special use permit so that you have to have it negotiated, security posted, in a way that's mutually acceptable to the county and the developer prior to the issuance of building permits. And the reason that the latter approach tends to be better for everybody is because the project is much further along in the development at that point. There's many, many fewer variables at that point. And an engineer can give a much, much more detailed and accurate assessment of what it's going to cost to decommission the project at that point. So I guess my suggestion to the county and to the committee tonight would be to structure the ordinance, and I think it already is, in a way that decommissioning plan and whatever security is going to be posted will be negotiated between the county and the developer prior to the issuance of a building permit, and whatever form of security that the county is going to be requiring of the developer is decided on at that point. In other words, construction is never going to commence without the county saying that they're okay with the decommissioning plan and the form of security that's been posted.
Are we satisfied with his response?
Bureau County voted 20-1 to approve that, so they
I
must
guess they were satisfied. Mr. Kurtz?
I'm sorry, does that need to be stipulated in the ordinance, or, John, can that be stipulated as part of the special use permit, building permit?
My advice is that the dollar amount and the form of the agreement has to be done in a public hearing, but we don't actually need the letter of credit until there's a request for a building permit. We can't negotiate these things outside of a public hearing, period.
Okay, but that wouldn't necessarily mean it has to be in this form at this point.
No, I mean, that's already what our ordinance says. So.
Okay. Oh, okay. All right.
Anything else? Yes, Mr. Hall.
I have been looking at the fee section on page 96, And I think that staff overlooked something in its presentation to the zoning board. And I would like the committee to consider that regarding the fee for a county board wind farm special use permit, that you establish a minimum amount, and I'm thinking a minimum amount of $10,000 to $20,000 for small wind farms, in which if you just simply went on the per wind farm turbine tower fee, I mean, let's say it was a 10 tower wind farm. I don't know that that's likely. Could be a small expansion, but that would only give you $4,400, which wouldn't even begin to touch the cost of reviewing that. So I know Livingston County has a minimum of $20,000, and then they add $1,000 per turbine. $20,000 would be fantastic, but might be seen as excessive for very small wind farms. But I really think that lines B6 on page 96 needs to be revised to say, but not less than X dollars.
Are you talking about personal when you say?
No, I'm talking about a wind farm. The minimum fee for a wind farm county board special use permit. If it's a very small number of turbines, you need more than $440 per turbine.
Okay. And if it, over a certain amount of turbines, it would?
With more than 50 turbines, I'm comfortable with the $440 per turbine.
Okay, 50 turbines. All right. So if it's less than 50 turbines, you're recommending $10,000 a turbine?
No, I just want some minimum amount. Regardless of how small it is, a minimum amount. $20,000 would be...
You're suggesting something in the $10,000 to $20,000 range.
Yeah.
Mr. Hall cannot make motions, so to talk about this, somebody better make a motion.
I move that we accept the change to B6, special permit, use permit, $440 per wind turbine for less for more than 50, but not less than $20,000 per turbine for less than 50.
Second. Motion's been made by Ms. Ammons with a second from Mr. Langenheim. Discussion. Ms. Busey.
Would it perhaps be simpler to say the County Board wind farm special use permit is $20,000 per farm or $440 per wind farm turbine tower, whichever is greater?
Yeah, that's great.
Okay, we'll use Ms. Busey's verbiage. Is that agreeable to the mover and seconder? Okay. Any other discussion? Mr. Schrader.
I'd like to eliminate N on page 88 and 89.
Hold it. We got one motion on the table.
I'm sorry.
Any more discussion on the change in the fee structure here? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Now, Mr. Schrader.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay.
I'd like to eliminate N on pages 88 and 89. That's the motion.
89.
Item N on pages 88 and 89.
We have a motion. Is there a second?
Sorry.
Seconded by Mr. Dennett.
If I may speak to it.
Go right ahead.
Before the prairie landscape change with drainage and people moving out here, there's always something going up into the air. We've got 300 plus foot concrete silos out here, to dot the landscape out here. The landscape of this country is changing here in the Midwest where we have power transmission lines, and this is part of it. So I have a real problem with trying to determine a visual impact assessment for any wind farm development when there's really only going to be three locations in this county that are even close to being viable for wind. I think it's something that it's another thing that's going to be hard to accomplish. And I just think it's just a fact of life of what's changing out here in the landscape here in the Midwest, and that's towers. I just came from Wisconsin this weekend. I drove down today, and I saw them all the way down on 39 because that's the way I come. And I've looked at those pawpaw for years and everything, and they get to the point, I'm sure you may disagree with me if you're going to live by them all the time, that you don't even know some anymore. My five-year-old doesn't really care. When we go by them, I'll say, look at the windmills, and he doesn't even care anymore. So I don't want to sound heartless or anything, but it's just the changing landscape of this, of the Midwest, and we're part of it. And if we're going to generate electricity and have computers and everything else, we're going to have to find ways to generate with this kind of energy. So with that, I'll give the floor. Thank you.
Mr. Weibel?
I guess the question is, why is this section in here? I mean, I understand that you could create a picture of what it looks like, but then is there any ability to say, no, we're not going to do it because it doesn't look nice or anything like that? I don't see that procedure in there. So it seems like it's just a practice for visualization. So if somebody asks what it looks like, this is what it looks like, but it doesn't matter what you think because it's going to look like that anyway. You know, you see what I mean?
Sure.
Well, you'll note, for example, one of the areas where these images are requested is any portion that's visible from and within 5 miles of a forest preserve facility. My expectation is that when we get a proposal, people who want to be opposed to the wind farm are going to say, you know, you're within 5 miles of the wind farm, of the forest preserve district, and you don't know what it's going to look like, and you don't know what it's going to do. And with the requirement, we'll have the photo. You can make a decision. The county can decide if it's a negative impact or not. It's completely up to the county, and I don't think that this is a big cost item for a wind farm developer to provide these images.
I agree. I don't think it'd be big. I think you'd easily do this in Photoshop. I would agree with you on that. It's not a big cost problem.
And I don't expect the county to start denying wind farms because of the way it looks in the images.
You're going to have some turbines a mile from the middle fork, and they're going to be in Ford County, and there's nothing we can do about it.
And we won't even know what it looks like till it gets put up. But you're right. They are going to be... Actually, I heard they were going to be closer than a mile, but...
Further discussion.
Lloyd is changing the tape.
And in fact, if you delete this, you can always require images if you think that they're necessary in a given instance.
Any other discussion? You want a roll call on this one?
Madam Chair,
yes.
We're eliminating N completely all the way.
That's
1, 2, 3. Yes.
That was the motion.
Okay.
Ms. Anderson. Mr. Dennis?
Yes.
Ms. Ammons?
No.
Okay. Mr. Jones?
Yes.
Mr. Langenheim?
No.
Kurtz? Mr. Mosier?
Yes.
Okay. Mr. Schrader?
Yes.
Ms. Wysocki?
Yes.
Okay.
That motion passes. Mr. Schrader?
I have a question on page 90 on the letter R, the complaint hotline. I got a feeling you're going to get phone calls, every phone in that office there in the Planning and Zoning Department, John, because I think people are just going to pick up a phone book and look for planning and zoning and just call you. And I'm not, is this a special phone line you're going to set aside with an 800 number?
This is a requirement on the developer.
It is.
Yeah.
The county doesn't do this.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And you're right, we're going to get calls too.
I know, you're going to get calls, but okay, okay.
I believe when we did the McLean County tour that we saw signs with an 800 number on them.
If that's the case, is there a way to route those phone calls without taking up staff time?
There is no staff time taken up under R.
No, but I'm talking about, because they're going to call planning and zoning office. That's my point. They're going to call a planning and zoning office.
Well, you know, if I my gut feeling is if you put a special little thing in our automated answering system that says, if you're calling about the wind farm,
call this other number.
No one's going to call that number. Because for that purpose, they're not calling about the wind farm. They're not calling about the wind farm until they get a live human being to complain to.
And that's what they'll find in the planning and zoning office. That's why I'm... Yeah, that's why.
Mr. Kurtz?
Is that... This hotline, complaint hotline, now reality in some of the other areas. Could you speak to that, please?
Does Bureau County have a hotline?
I do believe that we have one set up in Grand Ridge.
We have one set up for both projects that we have operating in Bureau County.
What's the traffic on those hotlines?
I don't know off the top of my head. I could certainly... find out.
Yeah, I'd have to say that I've never heard it ring, but I'm not in the office enough to hear it ring.
I guess I have a follow-up question on that.
Sure.
That's an automated, or is that a live person that's going to answer that hotline phone?
It's typically a live person, except, you know, for normal business hours.
Right, and for normal business hours, but after hours. You're going to get an automated system, correct?
Yes.
Anything else? Mr. Weibold.
A couple questions about Shadow Flicker. Since nobody's mentioned it, I guess somebody else will do that. First of all, John, for clarification, is a public street the same thing as a public road? Are road and street interchangeable?
Yeah.
I'm 88. Okay. On page 88M, M2B says, no public street should be subjected to Shadow Flicker. So does that mean, well, say if you've got an east-west road that, you know, I can envision you could have shadow flicker if you're, like, driving west, same, you know, as the sun is going down, you could have shadow flicker for quite a distance there, or you could have, you know, I'm not, how could you can have shadow flicker for at least an instant almost any place on that road. So I don't understand, to clarify what you mean by that statement, I guess?
Well, that's what it says.
I guess, how do you, well, I mean, I don't understand, how can you prevent flicker from being on a road?
Maybe it can't be done.
That's
that issue was not raised in the public hearing, and this has been in here from day one.
Okay, because we got roads that crisscross, I mean, they're all section line roads that crisscross most areas of the state, so I think it would be, you know, almost... maybe impossible. I mean, for houses, I certainly can see that because you don't want to have a house that's like directly, well, even that's going to vary because in parts of the year, as the sun moves throughout the horizon when it sets and rises. But maybe you could ask the engineers about this. I mean, have you dealt with shadow flicker?
We typically will do a study. We don't. I don't think that we have any wind farms that are set up where there's absolutely zero shadow flicker. You have some impact, but there's a threshold, and we would look at it from the standpoint of if there is a minimum threshold that it's more than this, then we would say we need to keep that away from that. And I don't know what those exact thresholds are that we typically stand to.
Do you identify areas where there will be flicker,
Run model simulations
based on where the turbines are.
Excuse me?
Is it based on where you place the turbines?
Yes, based on where you locate the turbines and the ground contours, the levels,
okay.
the different times of year, the location of it, where it is on the Earth.
Right.
The model simulations of where shadow flicker would occur.
Right.
Don't necessarily look at, and I have to say that I never really, I didn't look at this particular piece as closely as probably as I should. As I look at this and say anything that has more than 1 hour per year, I think that 1 hour per year seems to be a fairly low threshold. But if there's something that has, we're having days of shadow flicker over a 365 days would be an impact. But hour over 365 year or 365 days seems to be a little bit.
But I assume you're concerned with where people live.
Yes.
Not necessarily on a road where I assume people are moving. At least most people would be moving on the road.
Most standards that I've seen have been similar to what John just described. There's a minimum threshold that you cannot exceed, and it's not to roads, it's to occupied dwellings. And I guess I'm guilty as much as John is. I didn't look at that section closely enough, but typically you don't necessarily measure it at road locations.
Mr. Kurtz?
A couple of questions here on A, 2A.
Are we done with shadow flicker?
No, it's part of the shadow flicker.
Okay.
I'm sorry. 2A, existing dwellings shall not be subject to shadow flicker. Is that participating and non-participating? Are we talking about any structure? When it says dwelling, it doesn't say occupied dwelling. It says dwelling. So any dwelling on land that is being used by turbines and land that should be not subject to any shadow flicker? Is that possible?
I don't know if it's possible.
But that's what we're talking about here. Well, I don't understand. I don't understand that, actually. There's going to be some shadow flicker along. I mean, that's normal for a wind turbine. It's going to happen. And if it happens to touch a participating dwelling, someone who has a lease with the wind turbine, you're going to tell them they can't have that turbine because of that shadow flicker on their land? Is that what we're saying here?
That's what it says.
Well, I'm sorry. I got to make a motion to remove M, 1, 2, A, and B.
Wouldn't you just delete M then?
Excuse me?
So you're saying delete M?
M out completely.
Motion's been made, seconded by Mr. Dennett, to remove Section M. We also have a reference to shadow flicker on page 55. Would that section go as well?
No, that's the finding of fact.
That's the finding of fact. Okay.
Sorry, what is that?
Nothing.
Okay.
You sure you wouldn't just rather just delete M2 and keep M1 so you have some requirement?
I got the whole M.
Mr. Dennett?
I guess I'm a little confused by what you said, John. What is the requirement? Absolutely none, and you have nothing to base that on, if I'm hearing you right.
I didn't say I have nothing to base it on. but dwellings are very, I mean, most dwelling residents are very sensitive to shadow flicker, so we proposed no dwelling shall be subjected to shadow flicker.
Okay, but how, when the sun is at its lowest point in the west before it goes down, how far is the shadow flicker?
I don't know.
That's what I'm getting at.
I don't know. I don't know how to design a wind farm. I can't.
Ms. Ammons?
Well, those who do have had 2 months to look at this, and they never raised it as an issue.
I think one of the gentlemen did actually say that they conduct a study, and so M is asking for a study. M1 says the applicant shall submit the results of a study on the potential of shadow flicker. And so this motion then would remove any requirement of any study whatsoever done. Okay.
Ms. Anderson.
Yeah, I think we've had people here for public participation, or maybe that was at the hearing. I've gone to the hearing, too.
The CBA.
That were concerned about shadow flicker. So
the farmer that you talked to in McLean County was concerned about shadow flicker from his own wind turbines.
Yeah, and I went on that tour, too. So I think we've heard about it several times, concerns. I need to not have anything in the ordinance that didn't refer to it.
Would it make sense to perhaps define dwelling as to occupied or human dwelling? Or so if there's a shadow flicker on your chicken outhouse, we're not going to get concerned, although maybe the chickens might not lay so well.
Dwelling, by definition, a place where somebody
lives?
Well,
that's how I read it, but apparently others didn't, so I'm... Mr. Weibel.
I would ask the committee to strongly reconsider the motion on the floor. Certainly, I think that Part B should be eliminated, but as far as for people living out there, I mean, this is a big concern of them. However, I think that you might consider modifying A so that you stay some existing dwellings so be subjected to a low rate of shadow flicker and maybe identify that low rate as being less than no more than an hour of shadow flicker per year or something like that. However, you know, it sounds like there's some standards out there. I don't think we just go out there and should eliminate this completely. This does seem to be a real problem out there, particularly if you have a house out there, you're stuck in it. You know, I mean, on a street you can move or get away from it, but we're talking about people who live out there right now, not people moving out there. And as the engineers have said, they do studies and they determine the areas where, or they determine the best configuration of the turbines with to minimize the effect of the flicker on dwellings, not on the roads. Furthermore, I don't think any of us have actually gone out and seen what that's like.
Be interesting to see if there's any correlation between shadow flickers on roads and accidents. Mr. Langenheim, get closer to your mic.
Anybody here who can describe just what happens when you're in shadow flicker? What is it?
Well, the closest thing I can come to it, if you're ever in Le Pete's restaurant and you go to that upper level and that fan is going, I find that very distracting. I refuse to be seated in that area. But, hey. Ms. Ammons.
I'd like to ask for a substitute motion to the one that's on the floor to keep item M1 and 2A. And eliminate 2B.
Okay, we have a substitute motion to reinstate item 1 and 2A. Is there a second? Seconded by Ms. Anderson. Discussion. Mr. Kurtz.
Again, we're still talking, ladies, about 2A, any dwelling. That means any dwelling of any type, even if it's just occupied. We're talking about the farmer who has a lease with the wind farm developer. You're telling him that if there's shadow flicker on his, he can't have that turbine there. That's what you're saying. When you keep 2A, you say existing dwellings shall not be subject to shadow. There's no compromise here. It's either or. If you have some shadow flicker, what's going to happen? You have to tell that farmer who has a lease with the that he can't have a third turbine on his property because there might be some shadow flicker, that he doesn't bother him, and you're taking away income from his lease. I don't agree with that 2A. I'm sorry.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Ms. Ammons.
If I can ask Mr. Hall, the conditions for shadow flicker take in consideration other residents that live within the distance of the wind turbines, not just the owner of the property for which the turbine may be placed, correct? Is there a way to adjust A to, I guess there wouldn't be a way to adjust A, actually, in that way.
You could include a provision for a waiver so that whoever it is could waive that requirement.
So it could say existing dwellings shall not be subject to shadow flicker unless permitted by waiver.
Well, it would be similar to the waiver.
To the waiver of the other
previous
statement.
You could say, for example, this requirement may be reduced upon submission of a private waiver signed by the owner of the property.
Are you talking about a non-participating or are you talking about participating?
Either.
So in other words, a non-participating farmer who has flicker on his home for 25 minutes a year or an hour a year is going to say, I'm sorry, there's flicker on my house and I don't want that turbine there?
Then you're opting out of the program. Let's get Mr. Jones, Mr. Weibel, Mr. Lang and I.
Well, my thought on that was that why can't we just say, instead of having a waiver, I say the shadow flicker, really what we're trying to do is protect non-participating landowners. If they're a participating landowner, I don't really care if they have shadow flicker. I mean, they're the one deciding to do that. They're the one deciding to have the windmill on their property. So, like if Al says if they want shadow flicker, that's fine. But I think what Carolyn's trying to do is protect the non-participating homeowners from the shadow flicker, which I think is something that needs to be considered.
Mr. Weibel?
Yeah, I think, Mr. Kurtz, you're accepting a black and white issue when it's not. If a resident has shadow flicker on it, non-dwelling, as Mr. Jones says, that doesn't kill the whole idea of that farmer having a turbine there. That means they have to move it. They may have 100 places to move it to. And as you said, they have models to decide that. So there may be other options. So
if the house.
You just realize that they're not just stuck to one spot. If there's shadow flicker there, it's excessive, then you move it to another spot that's available in that farmer's property.
Well, Pius, haven't they made up a plan where these turbines go? And let's say three turbines, no shadow flicker on a little bit on.
Well, until they make.
We've got to move three turbines?
Well, they could.
We've got to change the whole plant.
Believe me, the models they have these days, they could push a few buttons on the computer, you could probably do that. I mean, they're not digging. This is all well done before they even touch the dirt.
Mr. Langenheim.
I find it difficult to believe that you'd only have it for 25 minutes out of the year. Really.
Mr. Nudo.
Yeah, I agree, Ralph. I think, just talking to the two gentlemen over there, when the sun's just rising or setting, on a 500-foot tall turbine, it can cast a long shadow, which causes two problems. I mean, one is the developer's ability to maximize what they can, put on a property. The second thing is the owner's ability to get income off the property. I think what's key is that the dwelling has to be a habitable dwelling. And we've said that several different ways, and I think a non-participating is just as important as a participating, but it's got to be a habitable dwelling, because otherwise you're really hamstringing the developer to places. Don't forget, I think as Ralph or Alan said, the developers have, they know where those turbines have to go to maximize the wind speed. You know, it's on contours. So when you start with this flicker that goes, you know, a long, long distance when the sun's just rising or setting time of year, you're really putting some constraints on it. I think habitable dwellings is a key term here.
Part of information. Part of information. What do you mean by habitable? I would.
There's people in it.
I would suggest man. Well, because really, I mean, you know, Mr. Mosher, as Mr. Schrader says, is resident of three states. So is his farmhouse habitable or not? Depends on time of year. I would say maintained might be a better way of putting it. That means, you know, it's got power going to it. Presuming it's somebody lives in it most of the time. There might be cases where pardon? The way you could maintain, do they put heat in the barn? Well, okay. It's maintained for living. How's that? Okay, folks, maintained for living. Well, I know people live in barns still, right? There's got to be some definition out there, because, you know, there may be a house that somebody's not living in for 6 months, and so is that uninhabited? They pop up a turbine, and then somebody was back.
Other discussion? Okay, we have a substitute motion right now on the floor, and that is to accept paragraph 1 and item 2A. Okay. You want a voice vote, or want a
roll call?
Roll call.
Sorry, Miss Anderson.
I said yes. All right, here we go. Mr. Dennett. Miss Ammons.
Yes.
Okay, Mr. Jones.
All. We're saying any dwelling can't have any shadow flicker.
There was nothing said to amend that item.
Okay, I'll have to say no then.
Mr. Langenheim.
Yes.
Okay. Mr. Kurtz.
No.
Mr. Mosher.
No.
Okay. Mr. Schrader.
No.
Ms. Wysocki.
Yes. That motion fails.
Make a motion.
We're back to the original motion, which was to remove all of item M. Call the roll.
Ms. Anderson.
Yeah.
Mr. Dennett.
Yeah.
Ms. Ammons.
No.
Mr. Jones?
No.
Mr. Langenheim?
No.
Okay. Mr. Kurtz?
Yes.
Mr. Mosher?
Yes.
Mr. Schrader?
Yes.
And Ms. Wysocki?
No. That is defeated. The motion was to remove it, so it's still in. Anything else? Okay. Obviously, nothing is going on the county board consent agenda. As we said at the onset of this meeting, we will hold this here in committee till next month. it should pretty much be as is, because if there's an opportunity in these 30 days to protest, they better know what they have to protest. Okay? You need to return your closed session envelopes to the clerk. Yes.
Do we have to approve this tonight? Or?
We should, but the motion's been made to adjourn.
There's a motion that started this all off to approve.
Oh, that's right. We originally started off with this. Okay.
We have to approve this if we're going to have the 30-day protest period.
Okay. So we still have a motion on the floor to approve this whole special use permit. Let's do one more roll call. This is to approve this amended special use permit.
Case number six. The case number
634-AT08.
Part A. Okay. No.
Ms. Anderson. Yes. Mr. Dennett. Ms. Amons?
Yes.
Okay. Mr. Jones?
Yes.
Mr. Kurtz?
Yes.
Mr. Langenheim? Okay. Mr. Mosier?
No.
And Mr. Schrader?
No.
Ms. Wysocki?
Yes. This is approved. Now we are adjourned. Thank you, everyone.